This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Amber Walsh. Amber lives at the intersection of private equity and healthcare. She chairs the McGuire Woods Healthcare Department, which has grown tremendously under her tenure. We're going to talk today about the 3 to 4 trends she's following in private equity. We'll probably ask her a little bit about leadership as well. Amber, can you take a moment and just tell us, what are the 3 to 4 key trends you're following in private equity today?
Yeah, I am really interested in the surgical specialty practices, and I always have been. It is kind of near and dear to my heart, the surgical specialty practices that feed into ASCs and are dominantly focused on some inpatient, but a lot of outpatient care. I've always been really intrigued by those practices. And I've spent years watching with interest in the pretty significant amount of activity in a lot of those specialty areas, GI, ENT, urology, plastics, pain, eye. Those are the kind of the key specialty drivers to an ASC. And I've been intrigued by some of the newer entrants in that area, some OBGYN, cardiac cath that's moving into the outpatient setting. But two that I'm kind of most intrigued by right now are two kind of more emerging areas of interest for private equity investors, both in the realm of musculoskeletal care, and that's orthopedics and podiatry.
And talk a little bit about what you're seeing in orthopedics. So orthopedics is always a big money specialty, so we've always been interested in it. But it's been hard for private equity to corral orthopedics because they continue to do well. They like their independence. What do you see in orthopedics? And then we'll talk about podiatry in a second.
Ed, that's absolutely right. And I think that's why it's been more of an emerging trend in private equity. There's always been interest there, but the multiples have been really, really high. Orthopedists very much, they deliver care. They brand themselves, they train very much in kind of individual philosophies, and many of them have a fiercely independent philosophy that has kept them out of being hospital employees, for example, and they were resistant as a large group, with a few exceptions, for years to private equity investment. But I think what we've seen is some really interesting recent investments by private equity in the orthopedic care management companies. And it's become an area that is an area of success now. There are some successful platforms that have been able to do some very interesting things, for example, in the realm of value-based care, in the realm of how to effectively utilize your surgery center investments along with your other ancillaries like DME, PT, imaging, and really take that private equity, the elements of private equity investors that go well beyond just the dollars and get into the strategy and the growth opportunities, and taking those things and being able to put together some groups that are lowering the cost of care and creating some more interesting, I think, elements for orthopedists that previously weren't part of the value proposition from private equity. It's definitely been a trend in the past couple of years.
And talk about in orthopedics. You've seen sort of the evolution of, for example, the Hopco, which is one of the big funded platforms out there and great growth. They recruited one of the leaders from Cleveland Clinic to help run that, and Dr. Barsoom, and they've got a great group. You've also seen on the other side, like Ortho Carolina, that at some point I think did something with United Optum, but didn't go the private equity route. Some of these big, big groups, and these big, big groups are really the sweet spot for private equity if they can align with them, aren't they?
Absolutely. And that, you know, we'll distinguish that from podiatry here in a minute, but you're absolutely right. One of the numerous attractive features of orthopedic is that you have some very, very, you have numerous large platforms that are attractive, that have already proven themselves in an ability to scale. So you don't have the private equity investor sitting there scratching their head going, can I put something together? How am I going to be able to grow this? Because you've got these very large groups, in some case, statewide groups, or at least metropolitan area wide groups that have already added on and grown. You know, despite my reference earlier to that sense of independence, there are many that have come together in these pretty sizable and powerful groups. And that is a perfect sweet spot. And you see some investors like Revelstoke, who invested in 2019 in Beacon Orthopedics, or Varsity, another 2019 deal in Orthopedic Care Partners, kind of hit that sweet spot with the initial investment in the orthopedic management company. And then in 2020, even through the pandemic, be able to take that scalability and already implement an effective growth strategy very, very quickly.
So let's pivot to podiatry. And podiatry is such a challenging specialty in some ways. And we used to joke about podiatrists, and I know this was unbecoming, that if people had 12 toes, they would bill for 12 procedures versus 10, because it seemed at one point there was so much graft in that profession and so much, billing fraud and other kinds of issues and so forth. And I know that's probably been tampered down over the years, but how do private equity funds look and invest in podiatry practices? And what do you see there?
Sure. It is in many ways, it is the polar opposite of orthopedics, in that you don't have very many sizable podiatry groups. So it's a completely different growth strategy. I mean, some data indicates that there's really only approximately 30 podiatry groups in the entire country that have 10 or more podiatrists. Completely different than orthopedics. And so the growth strategy that they're looking at, and you've already seen this from a couple of platforms, is more the individual one or two doctor add-on. So the growth is just smaller, it's slower, it's, you know, slightly lower multiples that we're seeing. But to address the point that you made in terms of just kind of reputation of the industry, I do think there's been a recognition that podiatry is an important part of the coordinated musculoskeletal care effort. So, you know, they are starting to become part of MSK bundles and part of kind of episodic risk-bearing arrangements that has made them, I think, more attractive. And then there's also in podiatry, similar to orthopedics and really most surgical specialties, you do have the ancillaries that are an attractive component as well. You do have the ASC investments, the imaging, that aren't just sources of revenue, but are also opportunities for cost reduction. Because anywhere you have revenue generation, you also have an ability to bundle that together and do something really interesting that reduces costs for payers. So I think that's part of what we have recently seen, that while podiatry is very different than orthopedics, they do have those similarities.
Thank you very much. Let me ask you, Amber, to shift to just one other question or issue today, which is, we talked a lot about today, magnificent, about big trends you're seeing, and you talked specifically about surgical specialties, orthopedics and podiatry, and you hit it really nicely. Just a couple thoughts. What traits do people expect from leaders today? Talk a little bit about, when you're a leader, but talk about what you expect from other leaders today. Just a couple thoughts there, if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. And something that I appreciate more and more is innovation. And I will tell you that is something that I learned from you, Scott, is you have always been an incredibly innovative, not just in your legal practice and the things that you've done in your career, but as a leader. And that is something that I valued very early on in my career, but I appreciate it more and more in every passing year, in recognizing that being a leader changes and evolves in what your team needs, particularly in a personal services firm like a law firm. People change. Different generations have different needs. Different individuals have different needs. And if you cannot innovate and think differently and flex the opportunities that you're going to give someone, then you're not going to be able to effectively lead, grow, retain, achieve the strategy that you've set out, whatever your organization is, but particularly for us when we are leading people.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And I think that's so true. But the innovation generally in how you approach the job or how you approach your profession, but I think you hit something really interesting, is the innovation in how you manage and work with people and see people and view people. Now you help them thrive. The innovation there is often not talked about enough, but probably more important than almost any other kind of innovation. So I think that just is a brilliant point. Amber, what I'm going to do, because that was so brilliant, rather than have things go downhill from here, I'm gonna tee up the end of our podcast today and conclude. I want to thank Amber Walsh, the chair of the healthcare department at McGuire Woods, and really a brilliant person who lives at the intersection of private equity and healthcare, for her thoughts today on both trends you're seeing in private equity and also trends in leadership. And I thought just brilliantly put today. Thank you, Amber Walsh, for joining us today.
Thank you.